The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I've been away on my own retreat for 2 months and then taught a retreat at the new retreat center at IRC for 2 weeks. So it's been a long time since I've been here. It's nice to be back. So I thought I'd talk about this evening, or just the topic to explore, is the topic of trust and how trust kind of undergoes an evolution in our practice. And sometimes we might hear, or I certainly heard at certain times in my practice, that when we are aware in mindfulness, when we have wise mindfulness or right mindfulness, we don't need to fear anything that's happening. And essentially our experience is trustable when we are attending to it in this way. And this was a little bit of a mystery to me when I first heard it. And certainly wasn't quite my experience of my usual way of being in the world. I mean, certainly experience didn't seem very trustable. I would say the untrustability of experience is kind of what got me into practice. You know, that people change, my mind changes, you know, it was just so much a sense of, you know, is there anything reliable out there? Is kind of what my mind was saying. And so coming into hearing some of these teachings and hearing, well, your experience is trustable when you're aware with mindfulness, with right mindfulness. It's kind of like, huh, okay. And so I wanted to explore how we evolve in this, in our practice, to come to a little bit of an understanding of this form of trust. The word, a word that is sometimes translated as trust, is the Pali sada, which often is translated as faith. And also, when I began my practice, the word faith didn't have a lot of resonance for me. I associated faith with a kind of a blind belief, or a belief in something that wasn't verifiable or wasn't, you know, anything that I could know for myself directly, but just kind of had to take somebody else's word for. And so that word faith had a little bit of had some baggage for me. In the Buddhist world and the teachings of the Buddha, there is a way in which faith does begin in this taking somebody else's word, or taking on the teachings as something to explore. But ultimately, we're not asked to just simply believe, we're asked to investigate for ourselves about these teachings. And I want to take a step back for a minute and look at what this Pali word faith, sadha, means. The literal meaning of this word, sadha, the Pali, apparently means something like to put your heart on. And so this is an interesting question, and one of the first, maybe an early exploration in our practice, is what do we put our hearts on? Where do we think we will find something trustable, trustworthy, reliable in our lives? You know, sometimes it's in the realm of material things, of money, you know, or a job, or a relationship, or a house, or, you know, something kind of external to us. Sometimes we put our trust in things that are outside of us, thinking that's what will make me happy, that's what will be trustable, that's what will be reliable. I tended to put my trust in relationships and jobs. That's where I put my trust early on. It's like, if I have a job and I have a relationship, I'll be able to make it through the world. Maybe not with like happiness, but at least make it through the world. And so there was a way in which I put my trust on those things. And, you know, certainly, you know, my own coming to practice had something to do with recognizing what I thought was trustable is not. You know, relationships are not trustable. I mean, we, you know, the opinions of other people change. I mean, we know what our own minds do, right? We know how our own mind changes in relationship to what we think about other people. So, you know, why would we think that other people's thinking about us would be stable or reliable? So that sometimes we put our trust on things outside of us. Other times we put our trust on, like, how we are. As I was reflecting on this talk, I realized that there have been times in my life that I have put complete trust in anger. That when I was, you know, in the grip of anger and acting out of anger, even though I wouldn't have framed it to myself this way, oh yes, I trust my anger, the way I was behaving was that acting on this anger, following through on this anger, this is what's going to bring me some kind of place of stability or reliability. That our emotions sometimes are what we trust. And again, you know, that way of trusting tends to not create a very happy result, let's say, when we trust our reactive emotions. And so exploring what is it that we place our hearts on? Asking ourselves honestly this question, this is a step into a different kind of trust. And asking ourselves whether what we do place our hearts on is very reliable. Is it a very reliable place to trust? The teachings of the Buddha ask us to first of all have a kind of a shift of perspective on our usual orientation to the world. The Buddha, in his awakening, in his understanding, his freedom, really. In the moment when he came to understand what he understood that is called his enlightenment or his waking up or his freedom, his liberation, was an understanding around how and why we suffer, how and why we experience stress, unease, dissatisfaction. The word suffering is often the word used to translate the Pali term dukkha, but dukkha has a really wide range of meanings, and suffering is just one aspect of that. It covers, this dukkha covers everything from the subtlest kind of stress or dissatisfaction to, you know, major reactivity and major trauma in our lives. And so his waking up was around how this suffering, this dukkha, this stress happens in our minds. And what he discovered and what he taught is that the suffering that we experience, the stress, the dissatisfaction, the unease, isn't inherent in what is happening in the world. It has to do with how we are relating to what's happening in the world. That when we are pushing and pulling, you know, wanting things to be a certain way, or wanting to get rid of things that we don't like, wanting to hold on to things we like, confused about what to do in a situation, that it's the relationship in the mind that creates this feeling of dissatisfaction or unease, this feeling that there's a problem here. And so the exploration in our practice has to do with looking at this relationship. And so what the trust in our Buddhist practice is asking us to maybe not necessarily believe this statement. Basically, you know, our suffering is created by our relationship to experience. You know, that's one way to frame in a simple way what the Buddha was teaching. And maybe the trust isn't about like believing that right away. Maybe the trust isn't about saying, yeah, I'll sign up for that. I mean, I certainly looked at that and thought, it sure seems like suffering's out there to me. You know, it's what those people are doing to me that's the problem. If I can get them to change, that's what will make me happy. But, you know, in my own exploration, you know, I came to the practice at a certain point when I kind of had run up against the wall of what I had put my heart on, run up against the wall of what I had been putting my trust on, which is that other people, you know, being able to navigate the world and make other people do things and respond to me in certain ways was how I would be happy. And I kind of ran up against the wall of that, and it's like, I have no idea how to live in this world and be happy. And so when I heard this teaching, I thought, well, I don't get it, but certainly what I've been trying hasn't worked. So, you know, this teaching that the Buddha offers isn't one that he just says, yeah, believe this and you'll be happy. He says, try this on and use these practices to help you uncover this truth for yourself. So he doesn't ask us to just believe. He asks us to engage. The teachings ask us to engage and to look at our own minds, look at how this suffering is happening for us. And so this, you know, the first step into the trust of the practice might have the flavor of, you know, just a sense of maybe there is a possibility out there. You know, if we've seen someone who seems to embody something different and they say, you know, this is how it worked for me. I tried this and it worked for me. You know, try it. Maybe it'll work for you. You know, so just hearing that, hearing this, there's a sense of possibility can give a sense of even willingness to engage, a willingness, as I called it to myself, I'm willing to run the experiment. I'm willing to try these practices on and see what happens. Even though I had no idea, you know, nothing else has worked. For me, the first expression of faith was something like, well, I'm willing to give it a try. Nothing else has worked. I might as well see. And that, I mean, in a funny way, that was an expression of faith, that willingness to engage. And so this is one of the first evolutions or one of the first steps of how faith looks. For me, it really had that sense of willingness to try. Other people may come in more from an inspirational door of hearing something and kind of sensing the possibility out there and being inspired by the possibility. I didn't feel so much inspired by the possibility. It's just like, this is not working. Somebody out there got another idea. So sometimes there can be a real inspiration and a draw towards the teachings. I think it can have many different flavors, this initial kind of spark of interest in exploring our own minds to understand how our minds do what they do, how our minds create this stress, this dissatisfaction, this unease. And so as we begin this engagement, as we start practicing, there's so many tools that the Buddha offered us, in beginning with the simple first steps even that the Buddha suggested of generosity and ethics and metta, loving kindness. And just picking up those practices perhaps, seeing if there can be a movement towards generosity and giving in your life. a move towards non-harming in your relationships with other people. Both of those simple explorations begin to connect us with other people in a different way. Just even a simple act of connecting with a smile, I found to be a whole new world of relationship. Just walking down my neighborhood, walking through my neighborhood and smiling at people I met, transformed my relationship with the people that I met. So we can engage with these practices and begin very quickly. I mean, just that simple practice of smiling at people. You know, from my own experience, my own description of what happened for me there, is I chose to make this a practice. I chose to, as I took my walk through my neighborhood, whenever I came upon somebody, if they happened to make eye contact with me, I would smile at them. And so it wasn't like I was trying to force a smile on them. If they weren't looking at me, I wasn't trying to do that. And I wasn't like trying to hold a deep, like soulful gaze or anything, but they're just a smile. And almost every time, the person would smile in return. And as I did this for weeks and weeks, I began to notice that when the person smiled back at me, it felt really good. There was an opening of my heart. There was a sense of delight, of happiness. At one point, I even timed it. How long does this last? It was like 30 seconds. 30, 40 seconds, something like that, that this feeling of delight stayed with me. I thought, wow, that's worth it. You know, for a smile, 40 seconds of happiness for a smile. So even these simple practices of generosity, of offering a smile, of just greeting people, of engaging with people in a non-harming way. You know, it is about connection. It is about how we treat our fellow human beings, but it also rebounds on us. It creates a sense of delight, of well-being. It's kind of like it's the feedback. The practices give us feedback if we're open to it, that this is a different way of living. This feels good. This feels like a direction that the mind wants to gravitate towards. It's a direction towards well-being. And so these simple practices begin to give us feedback, and our trust deepens because we have this understanding of how it benefits us, the value of it. We feel it for ourselves, and we see it in others. How that willingness to engage in a generous, with an open heart and with an attitude of non-harming. If everybody tried this in the whole world, oh, it would be such a different world. So you can start to see the impact that it has, and you feel it. You feel the shift. And so this deepens our trust. We also might choose to engage in the practices of meditation and mindfulness. Some of the core teachings that the Buddha offered. The teaching of pay attention to your experience. Notice what's happening in your moment-to-moment experience. As we start to do that, we start to incline towards mindfulness practice, towards settling the mind, meditation, maybe some concentration, maybe settling this, with one particular experience. We begin to, from time to time, maybe not, you know, all the time, and maybe even not that often at first, we might begin to get a taste or a flavor of a mind that is less reactive. We get a taste of what it's like to be here without this constant push-pull of I want something else to be happening right now. I'm bored with this, or I don't like this. I want something else. I want to figure out, maybe I'll think about what I'll do tomorrow. You know, so we have this push-pull with our experience. And when we turn towards our experience with mindfulness and noticing what's going on, we start to see this push-pull. And we begin to understand that this is how, that very push-pull itself is the kind of ground of the dissatisfaction. This can be quite a revelation when we first start to see it. We first start to see, wow, you know, this thing is happening. You know, something simple, even just something really simple, like, you know, my knee hurts. You know, I don't like the fact that my knee hurts. I want to move. I want to shift my position. At some point, we may start to recognize that that very attitude of I don't like this. I don't want to sit with this. You know, that very attitude itself is the dissatisfaction. It is the struggle. It is the suffering. And part of how this gets shown to us is that from time to time, as we sit here, I mean, maybe think about an itch. An itch maybe is less threatening than thinking about a painful knee. You know, an itch drives us nuts, but, you know, it's not going to damage our body if we don't scratch an itch. And so we can perhaps play in the mind with this idea of just sitting with an itch. And what we start to see, perhaps, if we just sit with this itch, that the itch is only a problem when we have a problem with it. The itch is only a problem when we want to get rid of it, when we don't like it, when we want to push it away. That what's happening is just that there's a strong kind of pulsing, probably unpleasant experience. But that unpleasant experience itself isn't a problem. The reaction to it, the not liking, is where the feeling of contraction, of tightness, of dissatisfaction, of stress comes from. And the way we might get to see that is that if we're willing to run the experiment and play with just sitting with that itch, we might begin to recognize for a few moments that reactivity drop away, that sense of, I got to get rid of this. Maybe for just a moment it could be, oh, actually that's pretty interesting. Wow, it's a little zing that just comes really fast and then it goes away. Ooh, and it's gone. Ooh, there it is again. And there might be a way that we see, oh, when I'm interested, when the mind is interested, when the mind is exploring it, and it's not hating it and wanting to get rid of it, it's a completely different thing. The itch is not different. Our relationship is different. And seeing that shift, that also begins to deepen our trust as we start to see just how deeply our reactivity creates our struggles. Seeing even just in small ways how when that reactivity falls away for a moment, oh, it's okay that I'm sitting here with sadness right now. It's not a problem that sadness is happening. And then the wave of like hating the sadness and fear of the sadness comes in, and then you see, oh, that's the suffering. It's not a problem to just experience sadness. So we learn through this witnessing, through the practice of mindfulness itself, we learn where the problem is, where the suffering actually lies. This seeing deepens our faith again. We have our moments where we see into things, especially in the first, you know, few years of our practice, we have moments where something is really clear for 2 seconds. And we see for 2 seconds, oh, when that reactivity is not there, it's not a problem. But then the reactivity comes back. This is the nature of our minds. The conditioned, habitual ways of relating to things. We all have our own favorite reactive emotions that we've kind of dug ruts with for our lives, in our lives. My own orientation was one of aversion. Pretty much everything I met, it's like, oh, don't like that. What can I get rid of? You know, it's like whenever I went anywhere, it's like, oh, everything around here is unpleasant. If I can just get rid of all these unpleasant things, I'll be okay. Deeply, deeply practiced this attitude of aversion. And so I would, on occasion in my meditation, see that attitude of aversion fall away. And it's like, it's a whole new experience of the world when that aversion filter falls away for a second or two. But the conditioned force, the kind of the, oh, you know, the years and years of practicing aversion come back. And so it takes, at this point in practice, you know, it takes a connection with that sense of, okay, I've seen something. I've seen the possibility. Now I'm back in that place. And in some ways it gets harder at this point because we've seen what it's like to not have this. And we beat ourselves up. It's like, I've seen this. I know how it doesn't have to be here. Why can't I just turn it off? We see how much better things are when we're not in these reactive push-pull places. And, you know, we wish we could just, like, flip the switch. But our minds don't work that way. And so, basically, we have to really settle into this trust based on this direct experience. It's a deeper kind of trust because now you know for yourself, oh, this possibility of freedom from this kind of reactivity. So you know for yourself, but it takes the willingness to keep reminding yourself, yes, it's possible. I just need to keep exploring, keep trying, keep practicing, keep understanding how the mind contracts. This practice unfolds in such a gradual way a lot of the time. We have these moments when there's a breakthrough, when there's a moment of seeing something so clearly. And yet, most of the time, we're back in our habitual tendencies. And so the wearing away of those habitual tendencies, it's supported by those brief moments of breaking through and seeing things really differently. I think that does support the trust and encourages us to keep going. But so much of the unfolding of the practice, the wearing away of these habits and patterns happens on a so small level that there's no way we're going to see it day to day or sitting to sitting or even week to week or month to month. It often is something that we can see as we look back over our practice, you know, 5 years ago. Any of you who have been practicing here for some length of time, if you just think back, you know, how was it before I started practice, and how is it now? That reflection over a longer stretch of time can give us a sense of what has fallen away. What kind of reactivity isn't so gripping anymore? And that can in turn deepen our sense of confidence in the practice. But if we're looking every sitting, am I doing better than the last sitting? Am I doing worse than the last sitting? It's going to be all over the map. And so we really have to suspend our evaluation of our own practice and just trust that there is this unfolding. And these little breakthroughs are kind of like pointers that say, this is what's possible. Now go do the work. This is what's possible. Keep going, keep going, keep going. And so with this kind of long-term view, we may begin to see after, even for me, after 3 or 4 months, I began to see, wow, I'm not getting as caught by my reactive emotions, my anger so much anymore. It's, I'm much more able to navigate things. I'm not like going into ballistic mode every other day. I'm kind of more able to ride these waves of emotion and kind of stay with it. So within like 3 or 4 months, I could see, I'm experiencing a little bit more ease here, a little bit more well-being. So this encouraged the practice to continue. So our initial meeting with the practice, the meditation, can give us a sense of settledness, perhaps, a pointer in the direction of well-being, and this encourages us. So this is a deepening of the trust. Now, at this point, the trust becomes less about being some kind of a leap of faith. If somebody else told me this would help, to, I know for myself this helps. And I have to have trust that this process is going on at some deeper level than I can consciously see. I guess that's how I would really articulate the trust of a lot of the practice. That, we've seen little moments and we have the sense of the possibility of the practice, but day to day, it's so helpful to connect to that sense of, yeah, I just need to keep going. That the trust that supports us is a trust that there's some process happening that I don't have total control over, and I don't really get to see each moment or each day what the results of doing it are. But over a longer time, I can see there's a direction. It's like the trajectory is headed towards more well-being. And so we keep going. We keep going. As we continue the practice, from time to time we may see even more clearly into experience the, this doesn't sound perhaps like good news, but we see perhaps more clearly into the impermanent, unreliable, out of control nature of experience. And we see too, this is kind of like we begin to recognize this is the truth. It's not a mistake that I can't find happiness by trying to make people love me. It's not a mistake that, that things go away, that it's like it's not a personal failing when impermanence strikes. It's just the way things are. And so we begin to touch into that truth and see just how confused we've been around the nature of experience, the nature of the way things are. We've taken it personally, that I can't control what my boss thinks about me. I can't control what, my partner does or says. I can't control, whether the stock market is going to crash and I'm going to lose money. I can't control whether I'm going to have a job tomorrow or not. The company may go bankrupt. I can't control these things. It's not a personal failing. It's the way it is. And the way we have taken it on as a personal failing is a large part of why we struggle and why we suffer. And we're at war with reality. so much of our lives, we're trying to make things be other than they are. We so deeply want things to be permanent, reliable, in our control. And so there is this like really, you know, poignant, oh, so poignant, heart opening that we start to see, yeah, things are impermanent, unreliable, out of control. And there's a deep wish to be happy, to be safe, to be at ease. These two sides, you know, this the truth of the way things are and these deep wishes that we all have. We all want to be happy and safe. We want our loved ones to be safe. And what part of what we see as we start to practice is, you know, these truths. We see in spades these truths. And we also are asked to open our hearts to the wishes may I be well, happy, and peaceful? May I be at ease? May I be safe? These two things seem like they're, you know, inherently contradictory. And in a way they are. And yet the wish for our happiness, the wish for our safety, the wish for our well-being, that's a manifestation of love. And love is a wholesome, beautiful state. We're not trying to get rid of love here. Actually, what we see as we practice is that the heart, what we're asked to do is to have our heart stretch to encompass both the truths, impermanent, unreliable, out of control, and these deep wishes for safety, for ease. Sometimes we, in seeing this conflict, we either think it's a problem with the world that it's the way it is, or it's a problem that with our minds that we want it to be otherwise. It's a problem where it's a problem not that we want it to be otherwise, but that we have these wishes. It's like we feel sometimes like we want to excise or cut out these wishes. If I didn't want to be safe, that would be okay. Or I'm just because things are unreliable and impermanent, I'm not supposed to want to be safe. Maybe that's the way to express it. That we think we're not supposed to want to wish ourselves well, happy, and peaceful because of this impermanent, unreliable, out-of-control nature of the world. But what we're asked to do instead is to have a different relationship to those wishes. Rather than having them be a demand of, I have to be safe, opening to the wish for safety in the midst of the fact of impermanence, the truth of impermanence, the truth of unreliability. Opening to that deep heart wish and the truth at the same time. The heart can stretch to that. And at this point, the kind of reactivity, because I think so much of the reactivity of our suffering basically has to do with the butting up of these truths and this deep wish for our own well-being. That there's this wish for well-being and there's this seeing that it's otherwise and this feeling like I've done something wrong or the world is a problem. So we have reactivity around these two coming together. And so the paradox of the practice is that it allows both to be there without the reactivity. And at this point, seeing that, allowing the heart to stretch to hold both, trust begins to really deepen. We see pretty directly in our own experience that things are, in fact, unreliable, impermanent, not in our control, and that we don't have to contract the heart around these wishes, the wish for safety, love, happiness, ease in our lives. We don't have to contract our heart around it, and we can be open to this truth at the same time. And we see that the reactivity is extra. The thinking it's a problem is extra. A deeper sense of well-being emerges when the heart can stretch and hold these two paradoxes, hold this paradox of the truths and the wishes of our heart. And so we begin to recognize in this process of the practice the the state of mind, or the cultivation of a quality that allows us to hold both of these, allows us to hold the truth of the truths of impermanent, unreliable, out of control, and to hold the wishes for safety and happiness and well-being. The state that allows both of those is a state of basically wise mindfulness, an awareness that is non-reactive, non-judgmental. And so we can start to recognize this state of balanced mindfulness, start to know that state. And then we can start to know, when we start to recognize what that place of awareness without reactivity is, when we start to recognize that, we begin to recognize when it's there, it's got a pretty kind of clear feedback mechanism around this sense of ease with what's happening. So we begin to recognize when it's there, when it's present, and when it's not there. And rather than judging ourselves when it's not there, we simply recognize at that point, oh, the mind is not trustable right now. This is not where I want to be making decisions from. This is not what I want to be, you know, evaluating my life around when my mind is in this state. This is not trustable. When the mind is not in that place of mindful, balanced awareness, maybe not the time to be making decisions. Maybe not the time to be choosing where our lives are going to be going. And so we learn when our minds are trustable and when they're not. And we learn to act and encourage the times when it is trustable. And another thing that I've seen too is that when that place of balanced meeting with experience is happening, you know, it's not that that's always pleasant. It's not that it always like feels, oh, blissful and easeful. In fact, sometimes it's really intense. And yet the mind can be with it. The mind can be, okay, this is okay. This is what's happening right now. And there's a trust, I think, you know, another deepening of trust is that there's a trust with that, a sense of knowing that place of meeting experience from that non-reactive perspective, that's where the practice unfolds. That's where the path unfolds. Whether we comprehend it or not, doesn't matter. And that, again, it takes a kind of really radical trust to be continuing and having no clue where it's going. It's like with this practice, we step into the unknown. We do not know how it unfolds, where it's going. But we learn to trust being present in this moment. We learn to trust that if I'm here now with this non-reactive awareness, when I can be, this is the best way to prepare me for whatever comes. We have no idea where we're going. We have no idea what will happen next. We can't know what's going to happen next. And so it's a very deep kind of trust that allows us to meet this edge of not knowing, of not knowing what's going to happen. And so this is kind of an evolution of trust through our practice. It moves from, and I think at different, it's not like it's a steadily changing, unfolding trust. There are times when the mind is very confused, even after it's had some really deep tastes of how to be present without that reactivity. You know, it gets lost again, and it's almost like we have to bring back, okay, you know, consciously, I know this is helpful. I'm going to keep trying. And so it's not like it's the steadily deepening evolution of the trust. But this is, at least in my own experience, these are different flavors or different ways that the trust is experienced. And to know that I think just to know that we're not so much in control of the unfolding of our practice, for me, it has brought a sense of relief. That kind of trust, it brings a sense of, okay, you know, I'm not in charge here. But there's a sense of trust that the unfolding of the practice is happening. And so how is it for you? You know, what do you place your trust on? How is it for you in the practice? Are there ways that you know certain things? Times that you get confused and have to think, is anything even working here? This is all normal. This is all completely normal. So, how is it for you? I'm curious. What is your relationship to trust? Any comments, any questions, any thoughts about that? Yeah. And wait for the mic.
Listening to you.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
It sounds, you know, like listening to you talk about this whole process and this side and the uncontrollable, and that you're kind of boiling it down to that we only have the moment, you know, and in this moment, that's it.
That's
all I can get out of it, and that's the only time when I have that realization that I feel like, what's the big deal?
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yes.
This last breath, in other words, mm-hmm. the breathing, I only have this one, and then, well, I've got another one,
uh-huh.
you know, kind of thing.
Yes.
So I don't know if that's what you're trying to get to, or...
Well, that recognition, just mm-hmm. that you articulated, that this moment is all there is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a pretty profound realization, mm-hmm. because our minds will create the past and future. Mm-hmm. And when we actually come in and meet this moment and recognize for ourselves, this is all there is, there's a kind of, as you said, there's kind of a sense of, oh, this moment is okay. And so that's where you start to place your trust in, if I can meet the moment. Meeting the moment is like allows the future, whatever it is, to unfold in the best possible way.
And there is no future.
There's no, the future will be a present. Yeah.
Presence already passed.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like right here and now, and the way I get to get
and
mine.
So what is your experience of trust in that recognition?
Trust, that everything will be okay? I don't know.
Yeah, it's
it
not
depends.
Quite that. It's more...
I don't distrust.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
Uh-huh.
I try not to. I mean, I have moments, of course, and days even, where I'll go off, you know, and not know what's happening, and this is taking, you know, a big chunk of my life and whatever.
So the trust isn't so much about...
But I have to just pull it in and say, wait a minute, you know, this is all ridiculous, what you're doing. You only have this moment, so why not just relax and enjoy it? And then that's gone.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the trust isn't so much about what will happen...
Or what even is.
Exactly. It's the trust is that when I'm here in the moment, meeting the moment, and there isn't the push-pull, that there's a sense of well-being in the moment.
Yes, but okay, here's the part. The only part where I get stuck is when no one gets it. You know, as someone that I'm having a... say a discussion with, and they want to be right or something,
uh-huh.
And it doesn't matter. I say that's good. You know, if you want to be right, that's fine with me. To me, there's no right. There's just what is. You know. So then that starts pushing my buttons. So
when your buttons are pushed,
right,
that's reactivity.
Yes,
and
that's reaction.
Right, that's what to be with.
I get that totally, and then I put on my tape or whatever. And start doing something to just kind of get my bearings.
Yeah.
But no, I work on it too. I'm not saying it's a piece of cake.
It's definitely not a piece of cake.
But it's a lot easier, you know, to just kind of go with the flow.
Be
nice to people, because why not, you know, and not even expect anything in return.
It can be very heart opening. To
it can
be in
be
that
for
place.
Some people, and but it took me many years.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
whatever.
So beautiful. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Oh, over here, Jessica.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
I just feel like trust. I just wanted to kind of share, like in my practice, is huge, and I think I connect to it as it keeps unfolding, like more and more and more, and residing in the place of trust and faith. And especially as you were talking about like meeting the moment, just like resonated with how. Like meeting the moment, like, yeah, we come to our practice and our mindfulness and we come and we meet our moments and we come back. And I feel like, that's what we do. That's what we practice. And I can see like more and more clearly in the unpleasant moments, like how hard it is to be there. Like, especially with like things that there's so many subtle nuances, like with things like fear and like how I avoid that. And I'm just seeing it like more and more clearly and how I can see like how the practice says like things have fallen away with my practice and how my faith like is in trust is kind of strong and just like meeting that and building and
it's like building the strength to be there.
Yeah. And all, and like space. Like, so it's like, there's like this wanting to like like not like with the, especially with fear, I just feel this crazy like but I guess that just having that trust that if I do sit and watch and pay attention and pull my awareness like really close to my experience, which is sometimes like so incredibly hard, like yeah. I just want to acknowledge that it's not easy when it's unpleasant, at least I think for all of us, but yeah. That to reside in that space really
it sounds like what you're saying is that there's a trust that it's valuable to do that.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
it's hard, but there's a trust that this is helpful. This is a direction that I know from experience helps. So that's a beautiful kind of trust to have that.
Yeah, and also what you were saying, like with the having the wish to be well,
to be safe,
yeah, is really kind of it's all there. I think when you start practicing more, but to really like sit with it and
not close down around that.
Yeah,
wish.
Yeah, exactly. Which is so easy, and I still I'm doing it all the time, but just to kind of come back and come back and come back.
Yeah. Thank you.
It's my experience.
Thank you. So thank you for your attention, for your presence here.